KAZU, Pacific Grove, Monterey Bay Public Radio.
America is waiting for a message of some sort or another.
This is Mae Brussel. The title of my broadcast is World Watchers. This is program number 842, January the 25th, 1988. Before I begin the program, I want to say that the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of KAZU staff or board of directors. This hour of World Watchers is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. Last week, following my program on World Watchers, the references to Martin Luther King, being Martin Luther King Day, there was another program that followed mine on this station, and it was a symposium of three people that had a conference in Santa Cruz, and it was played on this program following the World Watchers. And I have never done this before, but I want to discuss just for a few moments the nature of a comment of one of the people on that panel, because I refuse to sit back and take ignorance or lies passed off as lies to perpetuate those stories, just as I had on my broadcast, quoting a gentleman who edited the book of James Earl Ray, Tennessee Waltz, Mr. Topper Sasser, who said that when you learn lies, you pass lies on and you deny yourself truth. A gentleman, as part of a symposium by the name of Paige Smith, was described on the program as a founding faculty member from the University of California, Santa Cruz. I understand he's been off of the campus for a long time, but came on as a professor, and I would assume that being the birthday of Martin Luther King, he would have something pertinent to say. The broadcast had to do with nonviolence, the voter registration in the South, and then at one point, he managed to get in the usual slur, which we always hear so often, that Martin Luther King, he passed off, was just killed by some lone person, not for reasons political or having anything to do with King's growing opposition to the war in Vietnam. Now, this program was taped and made possible by Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz. And just to set the history straight, because that's what I want to do, having done 23 years of research, 20 years on the Martin Luther King assassination, I want to remind you listeners of just a few pages of the report of the Select Committee on Assassinations, the U.S. House of Representatives, 95th Congress, Second Sessions, Second Session House Report Number 951825, Part 2. The House Select Committee on Assassinations was put together in 1977, 1978. $6 million was allocated to find out who killed John Kennedy and Reverend Martin Luther King. As part of their findings, they concluded that in regards to John Kennedy's assassination, and that didn't come up, but I might refresh your memory because it's part of this same report, that there was a high probability that two gunmen fired at President John Kennedy, that other scientific evidence does not preclude the possibility of two gunmen firing at the president. Scientific evidence negates some specific conspiracy allegations, but some exist. The committee believes on the basis of the evidence available, that means part that they didn't go into, but just what was available, that President John Kennedy was probably assassinated as a result of a conspiracy. The committee was unable to identify the other gunmen, men, plural, gunmen, or the extent of the conspiracy. So that means even if it were Lee Harvey Oswald, it wasn't, then there were at least two others, and they acknowledge the other gunmen or the extent of the conspiracy. And then they went into the fact that the committee believes on the basis of the evidence available anti-Castro Cubans as a group per se were not involved, but available evidence does not preclude the possibility that individual members of the anti-Castro Cuban group were involved in the committee on the basis of the evidence given to it with went into the National Syndicate of Organized Crime. And as a group, they didn't kill John Kennedy. They were not involved in the assassination. But the available evidence does not preclude the possibility that individual members of organized crime were involved. The committee went on to say the Select Committee on Assassinations regarding John Kennedy, the Secret Service, possessed information that was not properly analyzed, investigated, or used by the Secret Service in connection with President Kennedy's trip to Dallas. The Department of Justice failed to exercise initiative in supervising and directing the investigation of the FBI. The FBI performed with various degrees of competency in the fulfillment of their duties. The FBI failed to investigate adequately the possibility of a conspiracy to assassinate John Kennedy. The Central Intelligence Agency was deficient in its collection and sharing of information prior to and subsequent to the assassination. And they wrote in conclusion about the fact that the Warren Commission failed to investigate adequately the possibility of a conspiracy to assassinate the president. This deficiency was attributed in part to the failure of the commission to receive all relevant information that was in the possession of other government agencies, departments, and the government. And regarding the assassination of Martin Luther King, they threw out the story of James Earl Ray's alibi on Rowell because they didn't go into it and didn't go into the David Graeber connections. They said the committee believes on the basis of their circumstantial evidence available that there's likelihood that James Earl Ray did assassinate Dr. Martin Luther King as the part of a conspiracy. They investigated Ray's motives and the general indications of a conspiracy, transactions as evidence of a conspiracy, including his leaving the Missouri State Penitentiary, escape being in quotes, of course. The committee believes on the basis of the evidence available that no private organization or individuals other than those discussed were involved in the assassination, and they ran down the right-wing extremist organizations, the Minutemen, the Klan, J.B. Stoner, the conspiracy allegations in Memphis, conspiracy allegations in New Orleans, the conspiracy allegations in Atlanta, the conspiracy allegations in Birmingham, conspiracy allegations in Louisville, Kentucky, conspiracy allegations in St. Louis, Missouri, conspiracy allegations in Miami, and in Texas and New York. It's funny that the House Select Committee, headed by G. Robert Blakey, no flaming liberal, he's the attorney for Mo Dalitz, who shared housing in Las Vegas with Robert Mayhew of the FBI, CIA, who set up assassination death squads for the intelligence community. These groups aren't afraid to use the conspiracy, but the so-called persons passing as leftist or middler concern jump at the word conspiracy, where the House Select Committee used it over and over again. They said the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation performed with varying degrees of competency and legality in the fulfillment of their duties. The Department of Justice failed to supervise adequately domestic intelligence division of the FBI. In addition, the FBI in the domestic COINTEL program against Dr. King grossly abused and exceeded their legal authority and failed to consider the possibility that their actions were threatening bodily harm to Dr. King and could be encouraged by their program. The Department of Justice of the FBI performed a thorough investigation into James Earl Ray and the assassination of Dr. King, but failed to investigate adequately the possibility of conspiracy in the assassination. The FBI manifested a lack of concern for constitutional rights in the manner in which it conducted parts of the investigation, and they came to the conclusion with the information they had that there was a conspiracy in that case also. This is the problem with the universities, these so-called houses of learning, places of learning. The professors go on passing the lies to the students or the lies to the young generation that come along that want to know what happened, or even if they don't want to know, they should be told about the negligence of these agencies and their role in encouraging somebody to kill Martin Luther King if he didn't kill himself. So I just want to say that it is a gross mistake to allow people, at least within earshot of my experiences, to tell these lies, because no matter where they are, I will try to make them account for them. The same goes for KCBS up in San Francisco this past week. There was a broadcast on the occult and Satanism and child abuse, and there were two so-called experts from Marin County and one from San Francisco. and they waltzed around the question of Michael Aquino and his Church of Set and his worship of Satanism and his love for Nazis and rituals in Himmler's castle. And when asked about Aquino's affiliations, his political ideology, one of the experts says that he was attached to the philosophy of Egypt. Well, his rituals were not around the pyramids. They were in Himmler's castle. And this is the way the so-called experts throw you a whammy to divert you from the truth, and the lies can keep perpetuating themselves, and that is what we have to live with. There was a very small but interesting article in the newspaper, San Francisco Chronicle, this past week. Helene von Damm criticizes the new ambassador to Vienna. Helene von Damm is a woman that worked with Ronald Reagan for 8 years in California, making appointments for him. She was a translator for TCI, that Transcomputer International. The president of that organization was from the Waffen-SS, Otto von Bolschwing. This week, she is objecting to the fact that Henry Grunewald, a Jew, is being sent to Austria to be the ambassador. Von Damm, who began her career, I'm reading the Chronicle, in government service as a personal secretary to Ronald Reagan, said Grunewald doesn't have any diplomatic experience and Grunewald is Jewish. This disqualifies him for the job because he will be unable to be emotionally detached to the land of Kurt Waldheim. Now, that is interesting because when Ronald Reagan became president, he was very indebted to a man named Theodore Cummings. Cummings came from Austria, just as these other appointees came from, Mr. Grunewald came from Austria, and he made a big grocery business fortune in Los Angeles, the food giants and the Frosty Freeze stores, the soft ice cream stores. He sold the whole group of businesses for $52 million, and he was a big contributor to the politics of the Republican Party and Ronald Reagan. So as soon as Reagan became president, Von Damm was helping him make appointments in Washington, this transition team and so forth. He was sent to Austria as the ambassador to Austria. And at the time, the CIA knew about the Nazi record of Kurt Waldheim in Austria. And Mr. Ted Cummings went there, and after 3 months, he had a heart attack. That's what they said. It was a heart attack. And he was sent to Los Angeles to Mount Sinai Hospital. He had contributed millions of dollars to the hospital, actually $65 million, for a fundraising for Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. And he was sent there to that hospital. Ted Cummings and his wife were good friends of my parents. My father was in the hospital at the same time Ted Cummings was there. My father had a gallbladder operation. And I remember Sue Cummings coming to the room and saying, "Now, don't tell anybody Ted is here. He came home from Austria. They were there a few months." And it was a big hush-hush thing, and I couldn't understand why, because he's the ambassador to Austria. Why couldn't they say he's home with a heart attack? Well, lo and behold, about 3 months later, in Cedars-Sinai, he died of cancer. And so that was the end of the Jewish ambassador to Austria. At that time, he lived 3 months and then died in Los Angeles. And then Helene von Damm succeeded the Jewish ambassador and became the ambassador herself. And now she's objecting or saying it isn't appropriate to have a Jewish ambassador in Austria. I think it's very interesting that she allowed the first one to go, and then she took his place after this very quick death of his and met a wealthy person, one of the wealthiest in Austria, lives there now, and says, "Well, now you don't need a Jewish ambassador," probably because there's no one like her to succeed him, and she doesn't want a Jew there. It was very interesting that she objected now when she was the appointment secretary for Ronald Reagan in the transition team and through the period when Ted Cummings was ambassador and died, and then was very thankful to take his position and go back to Austria where she came from. Now, there's a lot of talk of Central America in the newspapers with the plane of the Contras that just landed, with Ronald Reagan pressuring Congress for more money for the Contras, and there's going to be a big vote February the 4th on money for the Contras. And there's a magazine out, many of you know it, some of you don't, called NACLA, N-A-C-L-A. The letters stand for North American Congress on Latin America. And a friend of mine, a subscriber to World Watchers, sends me her copies. And their 20th anniversary issue that came out December 1986 has one article after the other on American imperialism and America taking over Central America and how they've destroyed certain countries in Central America and South America. And I want to recommend this issue to you because it's a very important and interesting description of situation. A lot of people like to hear Noam Chomsky talk about Central America. I think these articles are much more pertinent and to the point and direct about what is happening and how it's happening there. The address for NACLA, you can get the single issue, is 151 West 19th Street, 9th floor, New York City, New York 10011. It's $3.50 plus 90 cents for the mail. And you might ask for the 20th anniversary issue, December 1986. If I said that too fast, and I always do, then I suggest that you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, and I'll give you the address and tell you how to order this issue. It's a collector's item, a very good material that explains who we are and what we're doing to people in Central and South America. As if we didn't know, but it is particularly well written, and I hope you send for it. Otherwise, if some of you don't, I'll outline it for you and put some of it on the air. On the talk show part of my program that many of you subscribers don't get, when you subscribe to World Watchers, many people have called in and asked about NutraSweet. And from time to time, I've mentioned NutraSweet, and I just want to bring up some more material, some I gave you before, and addresses where you can get information. There's going to be a television program this week on People Are Talking on the West Coast on NutraSweet. One of the interesting parts of NutraSweet is a man named Earl H. Harbison, H-A-R-B-I-S-O-N, Jr. Harbison held two positions for NutraSweet. He was in charge of the Searle, the company, the pharmaceutical company of G.D. Searle and Company, and worked for them on a board position. Then he also worked for Monsanto at the same time. Earl Harbison became the chairman of Monsanto and G.D. Searle when they merged. Earl B. Harbison, Jr. He was named both the chief operating officer, the president, and chief operating officer. Instead of splitting those jobs, he was named to both. He was formerly vice chairman, and he succeeded Francis Fitzgerald, who died very shortly, again, like Ted Cummings in Austria. He died a month before the appointment of Harbison. Harbison's appointment, according to the Wall Street Journal, this is May the 6th, 1986, was a surprise to some analysts who presumed that Richard Mahoney, Monsanto's chairman, would resume the presidency. Mahoney had held both posts before Fitzgerald died. Now, Harbison had several jobs, as I say, with Monsanto. He was with them for 19 years. In addition to being with them 19 years, he was a former deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was also serving as G.D. Searle's chairman and chairman of NutraSweet. And he oversaw the merging of the G.D. Searle and NutraSweet with the large pharmaceutical chemical, and they were combined, and he took over this double position, having been in the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, briefly on one part of the talk show, I mentioned a newsletter, and many of you should send for this. Another subscriber to World Watcher has sent me some of these newsletters. There's one by, it's by a woman, Ida Honoroff, like honor off, H-O-N-O-R-O-F, P.O. Box 346, Cutton, California, 95534. And it's volume 401, A Report to the Consumer on the FDA Cover-Up on the Hazards of NutraSweet. And she has been putting out programs since 1979 on ecology and food and poison in our food and the dangers of the things in our environment that can hurt us. And her whole issue, if you send for it for the single issues 401, there are four condensed pages of NutraSweet. And she explains back in March of 1973, G.D. Searle, the international pharmaceutical firm, proposed issuing a food additive called aspartame NutraSweet to enhance the flavor. The offices of G.D. Searle, interestingly enough, are in Skokie, Illinois, that I always associate as a home base for many of the Nazis in the United States of America, and a home base for Paul Marcinkus, who became a Vatican, chief of the Vatican Bank, Skokie, Illinois, right out of Chicago. And she describes in her article how aspartame is 180 times as sweet as sugar, and when combined, it metabolizes as a protein, unlike sugar, which metabolizes as a carbohydrate. Then she cites certain doctors like Dr. John Olney, who objected to the safety of NutraSweet. He's from Washington University of Medicine, St. Louis, Missouri. He teaches psychiatry and neuropathology and was worried about the effect of NutraSweet on the mind and the brain. And he submitted that it caused lesions in the parts of the brain of animals, and it affected their neuroendocrine system and controlled sexual reproduction, rather. And he went into the chemistry of NutraSweet, the dangers, and visited a former vice president of G.D. Searle, who said he'd look into the obvious brain damage it seemed to be doing. And then there was silence and no more contact. And then 4 years later, he found out that the FDA had approved of aspartame, and he had advised them and warned G.D. Searle. And Dr. Olney published a study, and this newsletter she has goes into the study and the dangers of NutraSweet, and she gave it to Senator of Ohio, Senator Metzenbaum. And in the congressional record, if you want to look it up, May 7th, 1985, and August 1st, 1985, there are entered some of the damages of NutraSweet, and 12 mice that were given the NutraSweet showed brain damages. And a Dr. Colomb, C-O-U-L-O-M-B, did a study on behavioral effects in humans, and a Dr. Richard Wertman from MIT published that the evidence of aspartame may produce neurochemical changes associated with depressed seizure thresholds, and a Dr. William Partridge from UCLA talked about seizures and the effect of fetal development to pregnant women. Taking in Dr. Michael Mihalik of Philadelphia and Dr. Ronald Gautieri from Temple University Pharmacy wrote about the dangers of NutraSweet, and Dr. Adrian Gross of the FDA sent a letter to Howard Metzenbaum that at least the study showed that NutraSweet aspartame was capable of inducing brain tumors in experimental animals. And a Dr. Louis Elsass of Emory University was on Nightline in May of 1985 and warned that there was a whitewash of the scientific review, that it possibly could have irreversible mental retardation, epileptic seizures, chronic eczema, skin inflammation, and the IQ of children and fetuses could be reduced. In August 1986, a Dr. H.J. Roberts of West Palm Beach charged that aspartame or NutraSweet is an imminent public health hazard and asked them to check it out regarding seizures, blindness, depression, medical problems, hearing loss, vision problems, and said that there were two cases of blindness after using NutraSweet. Incidentally, a caller reminded the listeners here in Pacific Grove last week that NutraSweet is sponsoring a good part of the Olympic Games, and that is in fact true. I see it on television. I like to watch the ice skating particularly, and there's the big signs about NutraSweet for the athletes and people watching, sponsoring the games. And then this article continues that in August 1985 in the Congressional Record, it reports that there were several organizations put together, one called Aspartame Victims and Their Friends, that called attention to G.D. Searle and asked the FDA for help and challenged their claims. And then there's an Aspartame Resource Center of Community Nutrition Institute, and a James Turner, the attorney and consumer activist who wrote The Chemical Feast, filed a petition in the Justice Department about this matter. And Turner represents CNI, Community Nutrition Institute, and there have been requests for NutraSweet to be investigated. It is now put, I don't know if it always was, into Kool-Aid. Remember the nice Jonestown Kool-Aid? Well, NutraSweet won't kill you that fast, but it is put in chewing gum and all kinds of foods. The first U.S. attorney in charge of investigating this matter, there was a request for a grand jury in Chicago to see if G.D. Searle was concealing material facts and making false statements about NutraSweet and the drug Aldecatone. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that drug right. And the first U.S. attorney, Samuel Skinner, didn't call a grand jury. In fact, he not only didn't call a grand jury, but they found out that he was employed by the law firm of Sidley and Austin, the firm that defended Searle investigation, G.D. Searle Company. And sure enough, he joined the law firm instead of having a grand jury investigation. And then they stalled the grand jury investigation because the five-year statute of limitations for that grand jury is running out. Then a Mr. William Conlon, the senior assistant U.S. attorney assigned to the G.D. Searle case in Chicago, stalled that investigation. And then later, 1 year later, he, like Samuel Skinner, the former U.S. attorney, joined the law firm of Sidley and Austin. G.D. Searle hired the U.S. attorney and the senior assistant U.S. attorney, and they went to work for the law firm that was representing G.D. Searle. In 1970, this report says they found a memo written by G.D. Searle people, a strategy memo on how they would get NutraSweet approved by the FDA. And, of course, if the deputy director of the CIA was Searle's chairman and chairman of NutraSweet, Mr. Earl Harbison, I bet it wouldn't be hard to have a strategy memo with the former deputy director of the CIA as chairman of your NutraSweet and your pharmaceutical company. So they committed themselves to getting a favorable review by developing links with the FDA. And, of course, this turned out to be hiring the very people that were supposed to call a grand jury on the matter. And this newsletter that Ms. Honoroff has tells you about how the investigations were stalled. And so that gives you a little view of the NutraSweet. People's Daily World, November the 7th, had an article, NutraSweet safety is questioned, and there was concentration, they worried, of the chemical that occurs in the brain of a fetus. And the challenges were made by Dr. William Partridge, a professor of medicine, University of California in Los Angeles. And then just this past year in November 1987, there was an investigation, and Howard Metzenbaum's committee in Congress listened to the evidence, and they studied to see whether NutraSweet caused headaches, and they took several patients or people and gave them some NutraSweet, and the others had a placebo, and put them in a hospital, and they didn't get a headache. But the point about NutraSweet, it isn't something you check out. You don't have to have an instant headache. That may have been a false kind of symptom that was used, an easy one that then they could rule out, because what they were talking about was long-range damage that happens very insidiously and catches up with you years later. Washington Post, April 25th, 1986, had an article about Monsanto, the same company that joined with Searle and NutraSweet, Monsanto Agricultural Products Company. And this article has to do with their and testing a new kind of a microbe out in the fields, a laboratory-developed microbe. And in this same article, it includes the work of the Advanced Genetic Sciences of California that I did many broadcasts on, where they have live bacteria to put on food products as an excuse for stopping frost on the leaves. And I wonder about the safety of these matters. Washington Post said the Monsanto case is the third product to move through regulatory agencies and is the most controversially scientifically because the bacterium that they put on plants produces a poison which will kill some living things and which may remain for some time in the soil before dying. Monsanto tested the pesticide for 4 days without approval, and so did Advanced Genetic Sciences. And then there was another story, EPA stalls on genetic pesticide test. The EPA had given Monsanto and Advanced Genetic Sciences the go-ahead that they could use this live genetically altered bacteria on food. And then there was a quotation from the Washington Times. I believe it's the best interest of Monsanto and the Environmental Protection Agency that before we test more, the general public develop a feeling of trust and confidence that all decisions to permit experiments of this sort are based on expert evaluation of reliable data. So they pulled back so they could soothe us to know it was safe before they went any further with the test. And again, that's part of their PR operations to put us at ease about the dangers. The San Francisco Chronicle, October 28, 1987, had an article, The Myths and Reality of Using NutraSweet. And it goes into the possibility of mental retardation and brain damage. I don't have to go into the chemical combinations because most of you, including myself, wouldn't remember exactly what they are. But NutraSweet goes directly into the blood system, and this article brings up the problems and dangers of including it in so many different foods that we have. So that's a little bit on NutraSweet, and you requested it. I have more, and I did say on the air just a few months ago that in a request for new biological weapons, because of the advancement of genetics and science, the Defense Department asked and listed some of the new DNA and gene-altering weapons for chemical biological warfare and suggested NutraSweet as a weapon of war. And I had that on World Watchers several months ago, so that was part of a congressional hearing, NutraSweet as a weapon. So that covers a little bit more, and for you listeners that requested it, maybe you can send for Ms. Onaroff's newsletter and get a lot more about the details of that particular substance that is in so much of the food and beverages today. We'll take a one-minute break now before I continue the second half of World Watchers. Before, I just want to mention this news announcement that was in my box that is pertinent to our interests here. The Monterey County Sanctuary, the El Refugio, invites you to a seminar on political asylum. The seminar will be held Saturday, January the 30th, this next Saturday, at 9:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. at St. Mary's by the Sea Church at 12th and Central and Pacific Grove. The seminar is sponsored by the San Francisco Lawyers Committee for Urban Affairs, the Father Moriarty Central American Refugee Program, and the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. Topics covered include asylum law overview and case theories, preparation of I-589s and the hearings appellate issues, and also affirmative applications for political asylum and other immigration remedies. The seminar guest speakers include Leslie Simon and Kate McGrath on the San Francisco Lawyers Committee for Urban Affairs, and also Karen Musallo of the Father Moriarty Refugee Program. The Political Asylum Seminar is free to volunteers, $25 to members of the National Lawyers Guild, $40 to all others. That's an all-day conference. For more information, call the Central American Refugee Service Center, 372-4440. And maybe we can help some of these refugees that are fleeing from the death squads in El Salvador, the poverty of Central America.